Good afternoon. My name is Bree. I'll be your attending operator for today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the AV Start Act. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. The Q&A session will be for press. All non-press, for any questions, please dial 202-408-1711. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Kathy Chase.
Thank you, Bree. Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Chase, President of Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety. Advocates is a coalition of consumer health and safety groups and property casualty insurance companies working together to advance safer cars, safer drivers, and safer roads. Thank you for joining us on this call. Right now, the United States Senate is preparing to consider the nation's first legislation on driverless cars, also called autonomous vehicles, which is known as the AV Start Act S-1885. While Advocates has always been on the forefront of supporting technologies to reduce the unacceptable motor vehicle death and injury toll, I am disappointed that we must oppose this bill unless critically needed and basic safeguards are added. I would like to share with you five brief reasons why the Senate must put the brakes on this bill. Number one, at least three people have already been killed in the U.S. in crashes involving vehicles with autonomous capabilities, even though vehicle miles traveled by cars equipped with self-driving features is insignificant compared to traditional vehicles. Number two, the National Transportation Safety Board, known as the NTSB, is currently investigating a number of these crashes, and their recommendations will undoubtedly have direct bearing on our nation's AV policy. Number three, auto manufacturers can already test an unlimited number of AVs on our roads. They just cannot sell them on a large scale if they don't comply with federal safety standards. Number four, other than giving AV manufacturers the green light to sell potentially millions of untested and unproven AVs to the public, there is no good reason for the Senate to move forward with this bill as currently written. In fact, Advocates has a list of common sense improvements included in today's media kit, which would ensure safer development and deployment of AVs. You will hear more about these issues, including exemptions from safety standards, the need for data sharing and regulations, and documentation of AV performance, among others, from our speakers. And number five, numerous public opinion polls show people are fearful of AVs, and 70 organizations representing public health, consumers, safety, bicyclists, pedestrians, people with disabilities, engineers, researchers, environmentalists, law enforcement, and first responders all urge the Senate to prioritize safety and make improvements to this bill. In fact, Advocates commissioned an independent public opinion poll conducted just this past weekend, which found that 69% of people feel concerned about safety when sharing the road with driverless cars. This is up from 64% when a similar question was posed in January. The poll also found that 80% believe the NTSB's crash investigations will be helpful in identifying problems and recommending improvements for this new technology. And 84% of Americans want the NTSB to complete their current crash investigations before Congress acts on driverless cars. We have an outstanding lineup of experts who will offer their insights and perspectives on the state of driverless cars and the AV Start Act. A media kit is available on our website, saferoads.org. After all the speakers have given their remarks, we will take questions from the press. I'm going to give very brief introductions to our speakers in the interest of time. Their bio sketches are included in the online media kit. Our first speaker is J. Thomas Manger, Chief of Police of the Montgomery County Police Department and President of the Major Cities Chiefs Association. Chief Manger provides a critical perspective on how putting unproven driverless cars on our roads and highways affects law enforcement. Chief Manger.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Good afternoon. Let me begin by saying that I work in a jurisdiction, Montgomery County, Maryland, that has long embraced proven traffic safety technology. For years, we have employed automated enforcement programs to help curb speeding and red light running, and I'm a big believer that this technology can help our officers and the public reduce crashes and save lives. I believe that autonomous vehicle technology has the potential to save lives as well and to bring about sweeping changes on our roads. But right now, the technology is still in the testing phase, and there are far more concerns and questions than there are data-driven conclusions. And that's why it's essential for our country's first driverless car law to prioritize safety. Unfortunately, the AV START Act, in its current form, falls short in protecting all of highway users. Law enforcement officers have a special interest in this legislation because we are on the roads every day and because traffic control is part of our mission. So it definitely caught our attention when a couple of months ago, two serious crashes occurred with self-driving vehicles, one that drove into a parked emergency vehicle and another that ran into the back of a stopped first responder vehicle. Fortunately, no one was seriously injured in these crashes. However, these crashes were entirely preventable and would not have occurred if the technology was performing correctly. There's other folks on the call that you're going to hear from today that are going to highlight a number of improvements that are needed to make the AV START Act better. But let me outline three concerns of law enforcement. First, this bill prohibits state regulatory action on autonomous vehicles, even though the federal government has not taken any regulatory action. States must retain their traditional legal authority to protect public safety. The second issue is data insufficiency. Even though some states are requiring data on self-driving vehicle crashes now, the bill gives the United States Department of Transportation 3 years to act and revise data collection to include autonomous vehicles. All crashes involving autonomous vehicles should be reported to the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration immediately, and that information should be made available to the public. And then the third issue, obviously, from a cop, has to do with crime. Criminals hacking into these systems is a serious concern that is not adequately addressed in this bill. A cybersecurity standard to protect against potentially catastrophic vehicle hacks should be required in this legislation. So now is the time to make these changes in this act. Instead of rushing to a vote, let's get it right the first time. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Chief Manger. Our next speaker is Ken McLeod, Policy Director for the League of American Bicyclists. As a policy expert of making roads safe for bicyclists, Ken will talk about the very real dangers driverless cars pose to them and what needs to be done.
Thank you, Kathy. 5 years ago, I would say I was an AV evangelist. I saw automated vehicles as a way to create a safer, more reliable, and more courteous transportation system that works for all people. People in cars, people walking, and people biking. As a bicyclist, I was excited that I would never have to worry about an AV approaching me, being distracted, drunk, or looking to teach me a lesson. Unfortunately, as this technology has gotten more real, the promised benefits seem to remain distant. Earlier this year, the death of Elaine Herzberg raised questions that are still unanswered about how we can ensure AVs work for all people, and particularly people who bike, walk, and are otherwise outside these vehicles. Will an AV stop when I cross the road? Will an AV see me when I wear dark clothes? To realize the promised benefits of AVs, the AV START Act should ensure that AVs are safe for all people. By potentially attaching AV START to another bill, Congress is not debating the merits of the bill or waiting for the National Transportation Safety Board to complete its investigation of Elaine Herzberg's death, which might provide valuable insight on necessary safety provisions. Automated vehicles are too important to start off on the wrong foot. Congress should wait for the NTSB to complete its investigation, and Congress should ensure safety by requiring AVs to pass a vision test so that the public knows they can detect, identify, and safely interact with all road users. The League of American Bicyclists is asking people to support that message by visiting bikeleague.org/AV to send a message to their senators. I am still tremendously excited by the potential of automated vehicles. As the League of American Bicyclists, we look forward to engaging with the auto industry and representing bicyclists and pedestrians as these technologies are deployed. Right now, that means pushing for stronger safety provisions in the AV START Act. Please visit bikeleague.org/AV to say you support AV safety.
Thank you, Ken. Next is Dr. Missy Cummings. Dr. Cummings is an associate professor at Duke University and serves as director of the university's Humans and Autonomy Lab. She is also one of the U.S. Navy's first female fighter pilots. Dr. Cummings will discuss the need for an AV vision test standard, which Ken just mentioned.
Thank you, Kathy. I want to start out by saying I am a robotics professor, and though and because of that, I'm biased towards being pro-technology. So I don't want my comments to be taken out of context. I'm a big fan of technology, but I'm also a systems engineer, and we need to be clear about what is new and novel technology and unproven technology as opposed to mature technology. That's one of the big problems with AV START is that the underlying assumption throughout the entire bill, and in fact the people who constructed the bill, they assume that this technology is mature, or at least mature enough to be on the road. But the fact of the matter is, every researcher out there knows it who does any work with artificial intelligence, that deep learning, machine learning, convolutional neural nets, these algorithms are still very much a new and unknown for academic researchers. We're still learning new things about these algorithms every day, especially about how brittle and untested they are, and they often surprise us. And we do not need technology surprising us if we think that we're going to make it into a transportation system. So, and the code in these systems is probably the most complex software that we've ever seen in transportation systems. This code in autonomous cars, it's far more complex than what you have in commercial aircraft today. And I don't think anyone on this this conference call would get into an airplane that has never gone through any formal testing or certification. Yet this legislation is asking you to do just that. This legislation is willing to make guinea pigs out of the American public for what is fundamentally untested and unproven technology. Like I said, I'm a strong advocate of the tech, but I'm even a stronger advocate that we need rigorous testing. At a very bare minimum, we need vision tests. It's been clear from the accidents that you've heard about today that the perception systems on these cars are deeply flawed. So until we can actually have some guarantees that the technology is at least going to perform under expected conditions, forget about unexpected conditions, until we have that, we should not be putting these cars on the public roads. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cummings. Next is Dr. Micah Ensley. She is the president of SA Technologies, a cognitive engineering firm. Dr. Ensley previously served as former chief scientist for the U.S. Air Force. Dr. Ensley will talk about the complexities of when a human driver has to take back control from an AV.
Thank you, Kathy. As Charlie written, the AV START Act will lead to the introduction of a large fleet of autonomous vehicles on public roads that are going to introduce unnecessary risks to road users. While it's easy to point to accidents in which human drivers play a significant role, this neglects the strong safety component that experienced and knowledgeable drivers bring to the avoidance of accidents on a daily basis. Human drivers currently average over 495,000 miles between accidents and over 95 million miles between fatal accidents. No automated vehicles have come even remotely close to matching this record. Automation doesn't necessarily improve human performance. We now have over 40 years of research in automation that shows that many new types of driver errors and safety hazards can actually be introduced by automation. Automation causes drivers to lose the situation awareness that's required for safe driving and taking over control from automation when it's needed. For example, the NTSB found that the cause of the fatal Tesla crash in Florida in 2016 was over-reliance on automation, lack of engagement by the driver, and inattention to the roadway. These are all common problems with automation. And unfortunately, these incidents of distracted driving are only going to increase as automation improves. And there's no methods have yet been developed that overcomes this fundamental challenge. At the higher levels of automation being allowed by the AV START Act, we can expect far more such accidents. It's not just a matter of keeping your hands on the wheel or keeping your eyes forward. It's a problem of keeping your mind on the road. The AV START Act should require, at a minimum, the design of the automated vehicle interfaces support drivers by providing accurate information on the state of the vehicle and the driving environment, as well as transparency into what the automation is doing. In situations that the automation can't handle, highly salient warnings are necessary, with enough lead time to allow for safe takeover by the driver. The AV Start Act should not include its current provisions that allow manufacturers to remove the steering wheels, brakes, and controls that would allow people to take over when needed. Highly automated vehicle systems should also be required to demonstrate testing that shows safety equal to or better than today's drivers before it's approved for the roadways. Furthermore, automobile manufacturers should be required to provide detailed training on the capabilities, limitations, and behaviors of automated driving systems so drivers can obtain the accurate understanding that's critical for effectively overseeing and interacting with automated systems. These are very basic requirements that should be included in the AV Start Act in order to protect the safety of America's drivers, passengers, and pedestrians, and I urge Congress to address these needs in its bill before passage.
Thank you, Dr. Ensley. Next is Dr. Gina Matthews. She is an associate professor of computer science at Clarkson University. Expert in computer security and advanced software systems, Dr. Matthews will focus on the cybersecurity vulnerabilities of driverless cars.
Thank you, Kathy. Modern automobiles are extremely complex, internet-connected, software-controlled systems, much more so than most people recognize. And as citizens of the modern world, we already know how hard it is to keep bugs and malicious actors out of our laptops, our cell phones, our websites. It is just as difficult to keep them out of modern cars. However, unlike a laptop, the computer system in our car are attached to 4,000 pounds of metal, traveling 75 miles per hour or more. So security vulnerabilities in automobiles, and especially in autonomous vehicles, represent a huge risk to human safety. There have already been successful attacks on automobiles demonstrated that include things like gaining control of steering and braking from over the internet. The AV Start Act simply requires that manufacturers have a written plan for identifying and reducing cybersecurity risks. That's it. No requirements about the contents of that written plan, no functional requirements for improving cybersecurity, simply a written plan. That's just not enough. Substantive cybersecurity standards are really only common sense before we're asking the public, drivers, passengers, bicyclists, pedestrians, to share the road with these vehicles. As a computer security researcher, I can tell you that security through obscurity is not enough. We need transparency and iterative improvement. When problems and bugs and vulnerabilities are identified, we need a feedback loop that fixes them. There should be requirements for thoroughly documenting threat analysis and risk assessments, for sharing of information and data on cybersecurity vulnerabilities, attacks, and patches. And from a functional perspective, there should be, at a minimum, requirements to separate the critical safety components of the vehicle from other systems like infotainment systems that are likely to have a much larger attack surface than those critical safety systems and should not be put together in the same network in the vehicle as the critical safety pieces. Additionally, I would like to say that attaching this AV Start Act to a must-pass FAA bill is really just a way to maneuver around common sense investments in public safety, government oversight, industry accountability, and transparency. It is basically a blank check to an industry that is not currently prepared to police itself. Computer security researchers know how easy it is to overestimate your company's engineering abilities to identify potential vulnerabilities and fix them. Those kind of things come out in testing and in the wild, and you underestimate both the software flaws and the ability of attackers in a rush to market. Simply put, rushed legislation plus 4,000-pound vehicles, plus no human driver, plus software vulnerabilities, is a recipe for disaster and human tragedy, and we should not be allowing that to go forward.
Thank you, Dr. Matthews. Next is Jack Gillis. Jack is the Executive Director for the Consumer Federation of America. Jack literally wrote the book on cars called The Car Book, and he's here today to talk about the need for consumer information as driverless cars are developed and deployed.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Autonomous vehicles have the potential to be a technological vaccine that could dramatically reduce the tragic toll that autos take on our society. However, like any successful vaccine, they need to be thoroughly tested to specific standards before they are made available to the public. The current version of the AV START Act falls woefully short on the protections needed to ensure the safe introduction of the autonomous vehicle. In addition to the various concerns already raised at this press conference, privacy, data availability, and transparency must be a top priority to ensure safe and efficient autonomous vehicles. Because AVs will be tracked and monitored, regulations are needed to ensure that this information remains the privy and property of the consumer. Furthermore, because of the bandwidth being allocated to AV communications, we are concerned that much of it will be used for commercialization, which will not only seriously annoy consumers, but increase the already growing problem of distracted driving. As they operate, AVs will be collecting tremendous amounts of technical and performance data, information vital to the independent analysis of the efficacy of the various AV operations. This information needs to be made publicly available. Independent experts need to assess AV capabilities, and consumers need it to make informed purchase decisions regarding AVs. This is especially important with AVs because there are currently no standards set by the Department of Transportation that make it clear what AV features can and cannot do. This database must also let consumers know which AVs are exempt from federal safety standards. Making performance information available will enable the over 50 million Americans who buy new and used cars to precisely determine the features of a particular AV, and the public exposure associated with this will serve to stimulate competition in developing the very best AV features.
Thank you, Jack. Our next speaker is Michael Brooks. Michael is subbing in place of Jason Levine, who had an unexpected departure today. Michael is the chief counsel for the Center for Auto Safety. He is a veteran safety advocate and legal expert. He will be discussing the misleading industry talking point that the AV START Act is needed to allow driverless cars to be tested.
Thank you, Kathy, and good afternoon. I'll start by emphasizing that this urgency to rush passage of AV START is built on a series of myths and fear-mongering. The fact is public testing of driverless cars is already ongoing in the United States, subject to local oversight, and the fact is that AV START removes city and state controls and does nothing to mandate federal safety rules. The bill paves way for the sale of unregulated driverless cars to the public, and it removes liability from manufacturers. Policy questions involving potentially revolutionary transportation technology deserve their own debate and should not be treated as carry-on baggage. Here are two myths that need debunking. The first myth is that AV START must be passed immediately because without it or a similar law, manufacturers cannot test driverless cars and get the data needed to improve driverless cars. But the fact is that a federal law was already passed in 2015 to allow testing for an unlimited number of autonomous vehicles in public. The FAST Act is what is allowing AV testing to take place right now in 12 states. The fact is there's no urgent need for a federal law to allow for testing of autonomous vehicles because one already exists. If AV START did not pass until next Congress or never pass at all, driverless car testing could continue across the United States indefinitely. Waymo has just passed the 8 million mile mark in its testing of level 3 AVs on public roads, and their competitors are racing to catch up, all despite the absence of the AV START Act. Instead, what AV START does is allow manufacturers not only to test, but also sell AVs to consumers in states where no testing has been done, where local authorities have not approved such activity, and local residents do not even need to be notified. The second myth is that AV Start must be passed immediately because it creates a pathway to federal regulation of AVs. And the fact is that no, it doesn't. The bill does not require rulemaking of any kind to address critical AV issues such as performance and safety, cybersecurity, data recording and access, or infrastructure. For a product that is being marketed to radically enhance safety, this seems rather dangerous. Not only will this hands-off approach enable a race to the bottom in terms of non-traditional automakers getting driverless cars on the road, it provides exactly zero benefit to the driving, biking, and walking public when these vehicles arrive in our neighborhoods. Given AV Start's preemption of state action in these areas, the absence of requirements for federal rulemaking means that manufacturers are in complete control when it comes to consumer safety in autonomous vehicles. As history has proven time and time over, automakers are incapable of prioritizing safety over profit, and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is an unwilling regulator. Whether the danger is from Jeep gas tanks catching on fire, GM ignition switches failing while the car is in motion, Uber turning off necessary sensors, or Tesla selling advanced cruise control and pretending it's driverless technology, the problem remains. Any bill that does not require NHTSA to regulate ensures that the safety of the American public will take a back seat to shareholders as technology advances.
Thank you, Michael. Will Wallace is a senior policy analyst at Consumers Union. He specializes in product safety, motor vehicle, and food policy issues. Will previously worked in the U.S. House of Representatives focusing on safety and consumer issues. Today, he will talk about the hands-off approach taken in the AV Start Act.
Thanks, Kathy. Consumers Union, the advocacy division of Consumer Reports, is strongly urging senators not to recklessly push forward on the dangerously flawed AV Start Act. The bill rushes unproven technology to market, opens new safety gaps, and fails to address known automation hazards. Instead of setting reasonable, responsible standards for self-driving cars, the AV Start Act takes a hands-off approach and puts consumers at risk. And it does so on the basis of an incorrect assumption that NHTSA will always be there to enforce the law and get unsafe vehicles off the road if companies don't do so voluntarily. In reality, NHTSA has, for years, had serious trouble quickly and effectively getting unsafe cars out of the marketplace. Sponsors of the highly controversial AV Start Act are trying to jam the bill through the Senate at a time when NHTSA has become a less aggressive safety watchdog. The agency has failed to move forward on any new auto safety rules or to modernize its five-star safety rating system, and instead has been focused on rolling back consumer protections. What's more, a recent Consumer Reports analysis found that the number of NHTSA vehicle defect investigations in 2017 was the lowest in the agency's history. This report, based on Consumer Reports' review of NHTSA data, raises alarming questions about whether DOT leadership pulled NHTSA back from investigating potentially dangerous defects in consumers' cars. If that's the case, the consequences could be severe for the safety of cars on the road today, as well as for the oversight of emerging automated driving systems. For the sake of their constituents and everyone on the road, all senators should oppose including the AV Start Act as part of the FAA bill or other legislation. Instead, senators should urgently reach out to Senate leadership, seek to have the Commerce Committee go back to the drawing board on the bill, and ensure the bill truly puts safety first. Because right now, it doesn't.
Thank you, Will. Dr. Sean Kildare, Advocates Director of Research, is our next speaker. Dr. Kildare has been monitoring the false claims about what other countries are doing compared to the U.S., and he will debunk the claim that we will fall behind if the Senate doesn't pass the AV Start Act.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Sean Kildare, Director of Research at Advocates. One of the most specious arguments in the debate on the AV Start Act is that the U.S. is losing ground compared to other countries in the race to develop the car of the future. This falsity is being used to push for mass deregulation of this experimental technology so that our country keeps pace. However, this claim is misleading at best and totally baseless at worst. In reality, California is already the world's largest open testing ground for driverless cars. 11 states and Washington, D.C. have taken the next step beyond testing and opened their doors for driverless cars, which comply with federal safety standards to be operated on public roads. Other countries are taking a more deliberate and cautious approach. Let me provide some examples. In April, The Chinese government established guidelines for on-road testing, not sale, of autonomous vehicles. These guidelines required prior closed road testing, an experienced driver behind the wheel, data retention requirements, and limits on testing periods, among other requirements. While China has espoused plans to have AVs in their vehicle fleet within the next decade, plans are different from execution. Elsewhere in Asia, the Japanese government is reviewing regulations that could affect driverless cars and has allowed on-road testing with a driver behind the wheel. Japan is currently working on regulatory and legal schemes for controlling the commercial introduction of AVs, but even so has not begun to address the highest levels of automation. Similarly, South Korea has plans to test these vehicles, but has generally limited testing to 200 miles of public roads and test tracks. European countries have also generally taken a stricter approach by limiting testing of these cars to certain routes and areas. Germany, like many other countries I've just mentioned, requires a human driver behind the wheel of a driverless car in order to take back control and have other important elements, including requirements for vehicle data recording. In the UK, testing has largely been limited to a handful of cities, and the government has published a detailed code of practice for testing AVs, not sale. The UK government is also undertaking a 3-year review to establish regulations and legal requirements for allowing fully driverless cars on their roads. The AV START Act should not be propelled forward, fed by a false narrative that if we don't move forward with it, we will fall behind. It's simply not true. Now is the time for the Senate to be deliberative and establish regulations for AVs which will protect all road users. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Lastly, we have Joan Claybrook. Joan is a former administrator of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and president emeritus of Public Citizen after having served as president for nearly 30 years. Joan is also chair of Citizens for Reliable and Safe Highways, known as CRASH, and is a founding board member of Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety.
Thank you, Kathy. Senator John Thune is trying to ram the AV START Act through the United States Senate with an artificial urgency whipped up by the auto manufacturers and tech companies seeking to discard safety standards. Without immediate and major course correction, this bill will allow for the widespread sale of experimental robot cars to the American public, with many of them exempt from federal safety standards. Supporters of the bill are peddling and perpetuating yet another false narrative that driverless cars will be the silver bullet to eliminate traffic deaths and ensure mobility. While we support the advancement of technology, these advocates of this legislation have offered no evidence for these lofty claims that they make. Industry lobbyists are also painting a picture of impending doom if the AV START Act isn't passed now. To push the bill forward, they have created a fake frenzy in Washington that does not match what industry executives are saying about the readiness of the technology. For example, Bill Ford, the CEO of Ford Motor Company, recently stated, "There's been a lot of overpromising and I think a lot of misinformation that's out there. It's really important that we get it right rather than get it quickly," end quote. Similarly, Gil Pratt, CEO of Toyota Research Institute, said earlier this year that, quote, "It's a mistake to say that the finish line is coming up very soon. Things are changing rapidly, but this will be a long journey." He added, quote, "We know we will get to the true level five autonomy, but we don't know when," end quote. Likewise, our Morgan Stanley analyst Adam Jonas said, "In fact, the more we study and experience this topic, the more convinced we are that the inflection point of the adoption curve will be far later than the market may anticipate," end quote. And the leading industry trade publication, Automotive News, has echoed the sentiment that the companies should slow down and that the huge amounts of money that they're spending, the industry is spending for these vehicles, that they don't even know will sell or what they will cost. This all leads to one question: what's the rush? Speeding through the AV START Act without essential safeguards will put all road users in danger and weaken public trust, as many public opinion polls, including the one we released today, make clear. One of the most glaring deficiencies in the AV START Act is the failure to give the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, adequate funding and authority to serve as an effective cop on the beat. Industry complains that vehicle safety exemptions are needed because NHTSA cannot adopt a new technology quickly. But without any funding, how can it? Further, industry and Senate supporters of S-1885 argue that if a vehicle exempted by the bill from meeting safety standards is defective, it can always be recalled. But Just last week, the DOT's Office of Inspector General released a report highly critical of NHTSA's inadequate handling of recent vehicle safety recalls. And it's a fool's errand to think that the same industry that gave us the exploding Dakota airbags and the GM faulty ignition switches can be entrusted to self-regulate their driverless cars. As cars become even more complex, NHTSA's need for more resources and authorities to oversee these new experimental vehicles will be more pronounced, or the public will be at the mercy of industry cutting corners. Make no mistake, unleashing unproven technology while the regulators are sidelined is a recipe for disaster. It is regulatory malpractice that will cost consumers their lives and treasure. And if this bill is enacted, the auto industry will fight to the death to stop any subsequent regulatory requirements or legislation, no matter what is happening on the highway. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan. I just wanted to conclude by reiterating that Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety has been pushing for a number of improvements to the AV START Act. That list is on our website, again, which is saferoads.org. And we most urgently do not want the United States Senate to attach this legislation to any must-pass bill, including the FAA bill, which would evade any kind of careful consideration, deliberation, or amendments. At this point, Bree, I think we are open to taking questions from the press. And I just want to note that I believe that Dr. Matthews had to leave the call, but I know that Linda Bailey was intending to call in. She's the executive director of the National Association of City Transportation Officials.
Hi, this is Linda Bailey. I'm on the call indeed, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, Linda. Bree, please feel free to take over and line up the questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Questions are for press only. For non-press, please call 202-408-1711. Our first question comes from the line of Eric Kulish with Automotive News.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for the call. Very informative. I had a couple questions. First of all, how certain are we about the Senate schedule and the FAA bill coming up for a vote? Has that been scheduled? And then how certain are you that the AV bill, START Act, will be attached to it? And then secondly, how would the panel respond to the idea of cars that, skip the human interaction or the human takeover in an emergency? I think some of the tech companies are, not having level 3 or 4 and just going all the way, so you don't have that handoff situation where the car hands it off to the driver, under the assumption that maybe that's more challenging to build into the technology or could be unsafe. So how do you guys see that, feel about that?
Eric, thanks for your questions. I will ask Dr. Micah Ensley to answer the second question, but I'll answer the first one. Every week, Senator John Thune has been pushing to get the FAA bill to the floor. To my best knowledge, it has not been scheduled yet, and the last that I had heard, he's now pushing for next week. But I know there's significant appetite by him for it to move forward and also to attach the AV START Act to it. We are adamant in our opposition to this bill, which is the nation's first autonomous vehicle law, from being attached and swept through on as a rider onto a must-pass piece of legislation. Micah, I'd like to turn it over to you to answer the human-machine interface question.
So you're asking about cars that are essentially fully autonomous, what NHTSA considers level 5 automation. To do that, you have to have automation that's really at a very high level of perfection. And that's something we just have not seen. I've been working in this field for over 30 years, and we keep getting promised that, perfect automation's right around the corner, it's right around the corner, and we've yet to see anything that comes even close to that. Just to give you some idea, the Google Waymo car is currently the vehicle that's probably the furthest ahead in terms of the amount of development and testing that's been done in this arena. Looking at what they've reported to the state of California on testing of that vehicle, It currently goes about 5,600 miles between human interventions. Now, that's compared to almost 500,000 miles between accidents for humans. So it's a huge gap in terms of how often people still have to intervene to keep the automation going. And if you really stop and think about it, you know, do you really trust automation that was developed, you know, years ago by engineers in some other environment that won't necessarily be as aware of what's happening in this environment? Currently, automation doesn't do things like project what may be around the corner. Automation is not nearly as good at responding to unexpected, unpredictable kinds of situations that it hasn't seen before. So there are just real limits to achieving that high level of automation that's done. I don't think we'll see it within decades.
But I think Waymo, the way they're testing is having cars, or at least when they put it out for public consumption, they don't want to have like an interim phase of a car that, you know, a human would take over for in an emergency. You know, they want to either perfect the fully automated or not do it at all or wait till they can get to that point. I guess I'm wondering if you endorse that methodology.
Well, I think they're being far more prudent. They're being far more prudent than expecting people to be able to jump in. But getting there is just going to take decades.
I was just going to say, in the interest of time, I think we have a significant amount of reporters on, and we'd be more than glad to have a follow-up call with you, Eric.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bree?
At this time, there are no questions in queue. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Pete Bigelow with Car and Drivers Magazine.
Hi, thanks for holding the call today. I have a question for Linda. I just keep thinking of the fight, I guess you would call it, between Pittsburgh's mayor and Uber right now in regards to when they will start testing or if they will start testing again in Pittsburgh. And I'm wondering more broadly, what's the role of cities in this? How concerned are people you talk to about the effect of AV start on the ability for cities to have a say in what goes on in their jurisdictions?
Thanks. Yeah, I'm happy to take that. Cities are where people are generally living and where the market is for what people in the field generally call mobility as a service. And you can tell that because you can look at where Uber and Lyft are operating right now. That's the same market, right? Where can you make pickups and drop-offs without having a lot of empty time between passengers, basically, right?
Sure.
So for mobility as a service, cities are definitely where it's going to be happening. And I think we see that in the general approach of technology companies as well as who they've been working with, leaders in the field and transportation policy like Mayor Bill Peduto have really been visionary and trying to think about the future and envision it. And I think one of the frustrations that we have with this bill is it really just says, actually, never mind. You don't even have to talk to those people. You know, don't talk to anybody. You know, cities have nothing to say. And it just puts them on the sidelines. And, you know, we're really concerned about that because I think cities are grappling with a lot of new mobility issues right now. And I think that the more that they work together with some of these really innovative companies, the better the results will be at the end of the day for the consumers. And the federal action to kind of take cities out of that conversation completely are very concerning. And definitely, I'd say, you know, we have several major concerns with the bill, but I'd say, high among them is the preemption of local and state action because, I think that with this unproven technology, what we really want to see is a back and forth about the benefits, costs, and maybe better ideas coming out. And I think one of our concerns with this bill overall as cities is that, you know, it's a bill written for people who, or companies, I should say, rather, who, you know, have a really strong brand and safety. I won't name any names, but, you know, the companies that wouldn't put out, you know, something that's untested, wouldn't, you know, do something that might excite, individuals in the public to be afraid or be concerned about the new technology. And I think in the startup world, there's a lot less concern with that, and there's a much more of a sense that, we can just try things out, and if they don't work out, we'll just, throw our hands up at the end of the day and, you know, call bankruptcy and a bunch of venture capital money, no problem. And I think that the from a city's concern is it's like, okay, people are living here, people are living their everyday lives here, and, you know, we shouldn't be turning our citizens into crash test dummies for the purposes of private companies. So, you know, I'd say again, like, cities are really where it's at, especially from mobility as a service versus ownership model for the new for AVs in the future, potential ownership model. And I think that they must be critical partners for any company that wants to really show that they've got what it takes to do, you know, put out a product that is going to really work for people every day in all kinds of weather, through millions of miles, et cetera. So that's definitely a key partner for them, and they need to be looking to that more.
And our next question comes from the line of John Quain with New York Times.
Yes, I wondered how much concern there was, given things like Tesla's autopilot having so many accidents and all these other manufacturers having identical technology out there and not having any accidents, and there's no recall, there seems to be no sort of reaction to it on the NHTSA side. Is that sort of spurring concern about, gee, what will happen should this bill get passed?
This is Joan Claybrook, and let me see if I can answer that. There's tremendous concern, first of all, because, as I mentioned in my statement, the recent Inspector General report at the Department of Transportation was highly critical of NHTSA for not conducting effective recalls and timely recalls. And so that's a huge issue, and it's been in part an excuse, this issue of, well, let's just do recalls, an excuse by manufacturers to say, we don't really need safety standards because if there's a problem, they can be recalled. So that's definitely one issue. Another issue, of course, is that this technology is very, very complicated, and you've heard that from our scientists on this call today. And so NHTSA, without any funding, has no capacity to really evaluate and understand it. And third, there's not even a black box requirement in the NHTSA's rules. If you have a black box, you have to meet certain requirements. But if you don't want to put a black box in, as Tesla did not in some of their cars anyway, there's no way that you can do a quick evaluation of exactly what the problems are. And so it's just another one of the deficiencies in this legislation is that it doesn't really address the highly technical nature of all of this and the importance of having clear and obvious safety standards to protect the public.
John, this is Kathy Chase. I'd just like to add to what Joan said. Another deficiency in the bill is that level two vehicles, such as the Tesla vehicles that you just mentioned, are not subject to all safety critical provisions. They're largely absent in this bill, and we find that lack of covering level two vehicles is a significant failure of this bill. And we'd like to see it covered moving forward when the Senate considers improving the bill.
Interesting. Okay.
Our next question comes from line of John Wetmore with Perils of Pedestrians Television.
You know, what are the characteristics of pedestrians and bicyclists that make them particularly challenging for automated vehicles to safely interact with them, and how would you set standards for something like that?
Missy, you want to take that?
Yeah, I can take that. So one of the issues with pedestrians and bicyclists are their speed of movement and the signal detection thresholds that have to be set so that they can be seen. So driverless cars or even Teslas, they have to keep track of potentially very fast moving vehicles, but also slow moving entities like pedestrians, bicyclists. And one of the other problems are the degrees of freedom of movement. When you've got a car going down the road at 60 miles an hour, it's really only going to go in one very predictable direction. But pedestrians and bicyclists can actually make erratic movements very quickly. And so it's very difficult for these computer systems to estimate the intent of those entities, which is why you saw Uber, for example, they put their signal detection threshold very high because it was having problems, and this is in the Elaine Hertzberg death, determining what was actually an obstacle and what was not an obstacle. Did that answer your question?
Our next question comes from line of Brendan Borderline with National Journal.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for doing the call, guys. I guess I'll address this to Kathy, but anyone sort of feel free to chime in here. Today's panelists on the call really laid out a series of well-reasoned points regarding the problems with the bill. But, you know, in Washington, outside of the handful of Democratic senators that have failed on the legislation, it seems to be pretty popular among senators. You talk to Thune and Peters, and they say that, you know, they expect 75, 80 senators to vote for this. Anytime I'm reporting, that's largely what I've seen. Most lawmakers in the Senate do seem to support this bill. To what do you attribute that sort of widespread support, again, outside of the handful of Democratic holds? And why have you guys sort of not been able to chip away at that support in a way that, you know, has sort of that would have brought it down to a more competitive bill outside of having to fight over this FAA bill?
I think the bill has a number of complexities to it, and a senator who hasn't been on the Senate Commerce Committee hasn't been forced to really pay attention to the provisions in the bill. I think conceptually, you know, people want to be supportive of innovation, and it's been a very compelling argument to say that 94% of vehicle crashes are because of human error. But when you dig deeper, and we've had the benefit of time with the Senate being more deliberative in moving forward, more and more people are understanding that there are significant, problems with this bill, as evidenced by the, the diversity on this call today. When we first started working to try to get improvements to this bill about a year ago, the room was not as full on our side. But the more time that we have and the more people can see how the different issues relate to them, like Ken, for example, representing the bicyclists, he started out by saying, a year ago he was singing the praises of autonomous vehicles. And now that some of their memberships have been hit by autonomous vehicles and Elaine Hertzberg's death, they're understanding that there have to be safeguards put into place before we move forward with the nation's first infrastructure policy. So I think it's been a challenge for sure to get our message out because it's a little more nuanced than just being, let's push forward with technology.
Is the shift that we've seen on this call, are you guys seeing that with lawmakers as well? And is there a push to continue that shift, if so?
I've been on the Hill. Oh, go ahead, Joan.
I was just going to say, this is Joan Claybrook, without question. And the number of groups that have, raised the questions about the bill has grown from an initial group of 20, 30, 50, now 70-some groups. And that's affecting senators. They're beginning to see that this is not the simple little gung-ho technology bill that they originally thought. And so we've also been meeting with numerous members of staff and senators try and help them understand that this is a very, very dangerous bill. It's a dangerous bill. And so I know Thune is very fond of boasting that he has 75 votes. I don't know whether that's just bravado or whether that's he sincerely believes it, but I don't think that that's accurate.
Thank you.
This is Jack Gillis. I think another perspective on this is that it is tragically ironic that Congress, specifically Senator Thune, is considering sneaking this bill by the public by attaching it to the FAA Reauthorization Act. Imagine the FAA allowing untested, unregulated autonomous aircraft using autopilot to carry passengers in an untested fashion. But this is essentially what Senator Thune is trying to do. He's trying to attach it to an authorization of an agency that has insisted on the testing of autonomous planes. So it's tragic, and we hope that the 70-plus organizations that are opposing this bill now
will bring that to the attention of Thune and the others.
Brendan, I just wanted to add that's exactly what motivated us having this call today and also for commissioning the public opinion poll, because there's a disconnect between what is happening in Washington, D.C. and what the American public wants, as evidenced by the high numbers that we received saying, you know, 80% believe NTSB's crash investigations would be helpful in identifying problems and making improvements. And 84% of Americans want the NTSB to finish their investigations before Congress acts. So we're hoping that this call motivates some of the senators to listen to what the public wants and not just to listen to what the lobbyists of the auto and tech companies are saying.
Our next question comes from the line of Ashley Housie with The Washington Post.
Thank you very much. I will have several questions, and I'll try to ask them very quickly. One is that repeatedly in your conversations from all of you, you referred to this as untested technology, unproven technology, and risky technology. What makes you think, first off, that the automakers have any prayer of selling these vehicles if they are, in fact, perceived as untested? Second question is, you've talked about the desire for additional regulation, but you've also said, well, there's no rush to do this bill in the immediate term, so that seems a little bit of a contradiction. I spoke with the Senate Commerce Committee this afternoon, and they said it's undecided as to whether to attach this to the FAA bill or not, so I'm not sure about that. And why did you support, a number of you have supported this AV START Act previously, but not, you're feeling that it's not appropriate now? And the final question is, did you think that the 95% of human error auto accidents would be alleviated totally with the introduction of AVs? Thanks very much.
I'll begin. This is Joan Claybrook. First of all, this technology, in terms of the way that autos are tested on the proving ground before they're sold to the American public, related to the complexity of the systems in both the regular cars and these, is minuscule. And if you read Automotive News, for example, publisher of Automotive News, Keith Crane, who's been around this industry for 40 years, says that they should use the proving ground to first do the major testing of these vehicles. And many people have pointed out that taxi cabs in New York City get, many times more mileage and testing in a short period of time than has been done with all of these cars by all of these companies. So the amount of testing is really quite minuscule. And these systems are risky. I mean, we've seen crashes and we've seen deaths. And we've seen in the California reporting where Waymo and others are having cars run almost continuously, a large number of examples of where they've had problems. And those are all recorded in the California records if you want to take a look at them. So that's certainly one. In terms of this, the contradiction, I think it's just the opposite. When we say that we have a desire for additional regulation but no rush for this bill is a deregulation bill. Let's be clear about that. It has exemptions for safety standards up to a million vehicles a year when all companies are considered, based on what's in the bill right now. And that is not a regulatory bill, it's a deregulation bill. So that's why we are concerned about it. And if it were a regulatory bill, we wouldn't be concerned, but we're concerned because it is a deregulatory bill. And the additional things that we've recommended as regulations, for example, a vision test, which Missy Cummings described in some detail, a cybersecurity requirement rather than just a plan, and standards for the electronics in these vehicles, which are extremely complex. And FAA, for example, certainly has set standard for that with airline electronics. So that's the problem. There is no regulation in this bill, essentially. And we think that there should be regulation, and it should be spelled out very, very clearly. And in addition, there ought to be funding for NHTSA to be able to hire the kinds of experts and so on that will be able to have the agency be ahead of the game rather than grossly behind the game, which without any funding they're going to be. I think maybe Kathy or some others would like to pick up on the rest of your questions. On the Senate Commerce Committee, we can't comment. They change their statements somewhat frequently. So, you asked about the 95% of human error. Would it be alleviated? Well, first of all, in evaluating an auto crash, you have to look at it from the point of view of what causes the crash and what causes the injury. There's two different steps. There's the pre-crash and then the crash worthiness. So that when the auto safety law was passed in 1966, it set up safety standards for both. And the number of lives that have been saved because of the crash worthiness standards has exceeded 600,000 according to NHTSA, and that was some years ago, so it's probably closer to 1 million now. And so everyone admits that there is human error. Everyone makes mistakes. And so the way of solving the problem and not having people killed and injured has been with the crash worthiness standards. Hopefully, at some point, at some day, 20 years, 30 years from now, we will have self-driving cars that might be able to reduce that number because of technology. But that is certainly not the case today.
Ashley, this is Kathy Chase with Advocates. I can speak for our organization that we have not come out in support of the AV Start Act at any point. We had always pushed for improvements over the last year. And in today's call, it was the first time that I've said publicly that we're going to oppose the bill unless significant improvements are made.
Kathy, I think I have a quote right in front of me that suggests that these are a welcome development for advocates and other safety consumer groups and safety groups with whom we have worked to improve legislation. So that's from a quote that's attributed to you.
Right, and that was right after, if my memory serves me correctly, that was right after the Senate markup, and there were improvements made. In fact, we pushed for about 24 amendments to be offered, and we wanted a vote up and down. About a dozen of those were accepted, and that was because the chairman wanted to get the bill unanimously passed out of the committee. So when there were improvements made, we did want to make a statement saying there are improvements, and that did not indicate our support for the bill. It just acknowledged that improvements were made.
This is Micah Ensley. I'd like to speak to the question about preventing human error. And the question was, did we expect the technology to reduce all 95% of human error associated with driving? The answer is, of course, not. No technology is going to reduce all human error or eliminate it. The concern here is that automation technology can actually increase human errors. And it does this in very subtle ways by doing things like reducing your situation awareness of what's happening and your awareness of what's happening with the automation so that people actually have increases in distracted driving and are less able to take over control when they need to. Given that no automation is perfect either, what we're concerned about is the introduction of new forms of human error and new safety decrements when you introduce automation in ways that are not safe.
This is Linda Bailey with NACTO. I just wanted to chime in on a couple of things. One is that I would highly recommend anybody interested in it's actually 94% human error finding, look at the actual study that was based on. It's not based on deaths in traffic. It's based on all crashes, including fender benders. And it also includes, I think, a total of one pedestrian death when there were 6,000 pedestrian deaths last year in the United States. So it's a pretty unrepresentative sample, and it was actually designed to take the responsibility for crashes off of vehicle manufacturers and put them on human error, which is a long other story. I also just wanted to comment on your question about, like, if this is such a terrible technology, won't people just not buy it? And I think the question is, whose safety is the vehicle being designed for? Obviously, their concerns with crashworthiness is mainly concerned with the people inside the vehicle. And you saw that in a comment from Mercedes-Benz executive a couple of years ago saying, like, we have no moral quandary. I forget exactly what it went, but it was basically we are ensuring the safety of our consumers who buy our vehicles, right? The one inside is one we care about. And from a city perspective, I think this points up one of the major, like, I'd say underlying flaws in the drafting of this bill in general, is that it really focuses on the experience of the consumer, or more like the producer that wants to seek a consumer maybe, and not on the transportation writ large or traffic writ large. And obviously, from a city perspective, when we're managing our roadways and our streets, what we're really trying to do on a city side is provide a safe environment for everyone there, whether they're parking and getting out of their car or walking across the street or driving down the street in an unimproved vehicle from, you know, 2017 or whatever it is. And that's really the concern, is that a consumer of this new technology may be unintentionally endangering the lives of those around them. And I think that's what we saw in the Tesla crash in Tempe, Arizona, for example. The damage was not done inside the car. It was done external to the vehicle. So I think that that's a critical way to think about this, to get to the point where you say, like, okay, what's guaranteed? Like, sure, someone signs probably some, you know, paperwork when they buy a Tesla, for example, today, that absolves the company of responsibility for off-label use or whatever it is, but that's not true of anybody outside the car.
And our final question comes from the line of Pete Bigelow with Car and Driver Magazine.
Hi, Kathy. I had a quick follow-up for something that you mentioned earlier about the deficiency of Level 2 vehicles not being covered by the bill. I'm wondering if you think that automakers are kind of describing their systems as Level 2 now, even though they might actually be capable of Level 3 to kind of get around this? And then maybe more broadly, you know, who should it be included in this bill? Who ultimately determines what level a car is? Because right now there's no standard for that either.
Well, I think that's a great point. I'd actually like to ask our engineer and director of research, Dr. Sean Kildare, to answer. He has more of an in-depth understanding of the different levels of the SAE levels, and I'd like him to address your question.
Great. Thanks.
Hi. So I think there are a couple of things baked into that question there. The first one is, in determining what level of vehicle is, as you pointed out, there is no current regulation or standard for that. While we do have you know, the SAE description of these different levels, there's nobody actually determining what your system is. And that causes an issue just in terms of trying to figure out how to deal with these vehicles. I think the other issue you have here, and I believe that Jack Gillis can speak to this, or Will Wallace can speak to this, is when you have this confusion between what the consumer understands and what the engineers understand. You know, I think we've seen this, and this actually goes to our recent poll. I think we've seen this most prevalently in the crashes that's been happening with Tesla. When you are billing something as an autopilot, and people have had experience with things as autopilot, as an understanding of how their planes work when they get in the plane, and you know, be it good or bad, their understanding of it. And then when these crashes happen and Tesla continues to repeat and blame the driver and say it was their fault, you know, we're seeing a very different thing when these crashes are analyzed. If you look at the results from the crash down in Florida, we know that the NTSB concluded that there was a contribution to the cause of the crash was to the design of the autopilot system that Tesla has been selling. It creates a false sense of security, that people are misusing it, and that Tesla has not done anything to address that. You know, the fact that 84% of our respondents said we need to wait until the NTSB, you know, takes a look at these things, I think is very important and should give all of us pause. I think if you go and ask people down in Tempe, Arizona, what happens when you speak before you necessarily know the facts, there can be trouble there. We know that there were a lot of extenuating circumstances going on in that crash about the fact that Uber had turned off the underlying system. Uber had turned off the ability to their system to brake. Uber had turned off or not designed any warnings for their driver. Their safety driver was distracted and not paying attention. Again, another possible case of over-reliance. But still, we need to wait and let NTSB, the preeminent investigatory service, actually do their job. You know, we have lots of recommendations that are out there that we think should be considered. You know, we're looking at this bill, which is going to open up the market for what they call Level 4 and Level 5 fully autonomous vehicles, when we have problems with Level 2s that are not being addressed. And I think if you ask NTSB what their issues are with it, I think they're going to come up with the same thing, that these things need to be addressed, that these shortcomings that we recognize that aren't new need to be addressed before we go letting these things out into the wild. And I don't know if Jack or Will are still here on the line, but have a comment about that problem with consumer perception and understanding.
Yes, this is Jack Gillis, and I agree, and let's bring this all the way back to the reporter from the Washington Post question as well. One of the reasons why testing and developing standards is so important is because we do believe the autonomous vehicle has tremendous potential. But if untested vehicles are let out into the market, or let loose, as Sean says, into the marketplace, you are going to potentially turn consumers off. I commend to the reporters on this line the research that the Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety has done on consumer attitudes. Consumers are skeptical. They are concerned. And with the addition of untested vehicles being placed into the marketplace, more accidents being occurring, we are going to slowly turn consumers farther and farther away from the potential good that the autonomous vehicle can do. So we need good fences, we need good rules, and we need to establish a procedure by which all the companies can be tested so that these products go into the marketplace in the best possible form possible, so that it doesn't turn consumers off to the potential for the autonomous vehicle down the road.
Pete, this is Kathy Chase. I just also wanted to add, going back to Ashley's question, I mentioned that there were improvements made to the bill. One of the improvements that was made to the bill was offered by Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey that was incorporated into the bill, and in fact, it's in Section 9, and if a manufacturer provides false or misleading reports about the capabilities of the autonomous vehicle, they will be subject to civil penalties. So we were able to get that improvement made to the bill, but we still think it should go further.
And we have one final question from the line of Eric Kulish with Automotive News.
Yeah, thank you for taking one extra call. So someone alluded to this earlier, and it made me think. Joan mentioned that the bill's, you know, more of a deregulatory exercise. Do you see it also as a way to shift liability or to, you know, protect the automakers from liability, kind of in the same way maybe after 9/11 some of the terrorism technology bills were out there to have certain technologies certified, and then if you use that technology and there was a terrorist act, you know, the company would be, you know, wouldn't be liable for, you know, lawsuits and so forth. So from a liability standpoint, how do you see this bill?
Well, this is Joan. there are provisions in this bill that are vehemently opposed by the American Association of Justice, the trial lawyer organization, and they have given detailed comments to Senator Thune's committee, opposing those provisions and offering alternatives which have not been adopted. So the answer is yes. It would, by federal fiat in the bill, it would change the liability law. And most liability cases, auto crashes, are brought at the state level. There's state law and state court judges. And so when you have a federal law, a preemptive federal law, intervening, it causes not only confusion in the court in terms of jurisdiction, but also it's sort of a fast-track way of changing all state laws in one fell swoop. So, yes, that's definitely true in this bill.
There are no more questions in queue.
This is Kathy Chase with Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety. I just want to thank all of the tremendous speakers who took time out of their busy schedules to participate in today's call, both giving statements and answering the extensive questions. And thank you to all the members of the press who called in to ask questions. Again, if there are any non-press questions, please feel free to call Advocates at 202-408 1711, and the media kit is available on our website, which is saferoads.org. Thank you very much.
Also, Kathy, I think you should say if any press have further questions, they can also call the organization.
What Joan just said.
At this time, this concludes this afternoon's teleconference. You may now disconnect your lines.